Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Losses Above Replacement, the best baseball podcast to grace your ears. I am today's host, Alex Clark, joined by our very own pair of screwballs and Matthias Almakurasaki and Ryan Splash Potts. My main men, how are we doing on this lovely December day?
Bro, shout out to Brent Honeywell. He was throwing screwballs this year. I had no idea what the Braves were looking at when they played him. Also, shout out to Christy Mathewson. Shout out to Carl Hubble, not Christy Mathewson. The GOAT, Hall of Famer, God tier pitcher.
I'd like to say I'm doing all right. I just got back from Atlanta last night. I would like to shout out Delta Airlines. I had a 5.5 hour delay on my way down to Atlanta, but they gave us a bit of a refund, I'll tell you that much. And yesterday the cabin door closed, and 10 minutes later we were off the ground, and we even landed early. So that was awesome. Also, I just want to say it's a great time to be a Syracuse sports fan. We are getting all the transfers right now. Shout out to Kyle McCord. I don't know if he'll be amazing next year, but I'll tell you one thing, as there is some loud sirens in the background right now, the sound of New York City. But anyways, I'm looking forward to watching Kyle McCord be Syracuse's quarterback next year.
Fair enough. And I'll also give a shout out, SBA Christy Mathewson, to one Rube Foster, who taught Christy Mathewson his screwball.
Yep.
So, again, thank you to MLB The Show for showcasing that out. That, again, if you haven't already, honestly, 100%, this, we're not sponsored yet, but MLB The Show 23 storylines, go play through all of it. It is amazing. I highly storytelling. Recommend it. 100%.
I'd like to give a shout out to Alex for using the word yet in that sentence. Also, Christy Mathewson, for all intents and purposes, threw a fadeaway or threw a screwball, but it's called a fadeaway. It's the same function. So shout out to the screwball.
Yep, shout out to the screwball. But right now, talking about screwballs, we were all kind of throwing one a little bit ago, as there was a big trade. There was a lot of talk about whether or not the Rays were going to trade Tyler Glasnow, and he was traded. He was traded to the Dodgers, who just keep on adding more and more talent, really going back to their name of the MLB, the show of the real world. Here, as the Rays dealt Glasnow and Manuel Margot for two prospects. Here in Ryan Pepo, I don't know if I said that one right, and Johnny DeLuca. So, guys, we had a feeling that Glasnow was going to be traded, but on top of it, he was also given a pretty sizable extension, a 5-year, $136.5 million with the Dodgers. Obviously, again, they are able to get this kind of payroll because of the Ohtani contract, which we'll touch on a little bit later on in the podcast. But guys, initial reactions here. Do you think that the Rays overspent on these prospects? Do you think that this was just their way of getting out of Glasnow? Are the Dodgers really becoming bigger threats now? What are your guys' initial thoughts?
I really like this trade, actually, for both sides. I think Glasnow, so the tough part with Glasnow is that his ceiling is very high. We know how good he can be. It's just, I think that he's getting paid a little more for that ceiling. I'd say he's being paid for something between what he is, which is very injury prone, and what he could be. Because when he's at his best, he's probably worth over $30 million annually. He's getting about $27 million annually. His peripherals were great. 3.53 ERA, but also a 2.91 FIP, 2.75 XFIP. So there, I think the numbers are going to be better this year. Yes, he's on the wrong side of 30, but I'm looking forward to watching him pitch, especially for his hometown team. I think Ryan Pepiot is a guy who the Rays, I mean, I feel like the Rays just specialize in turning guys like him into ace-type pitchers. And I think Pepiot, he's already pitched in the majors. He's been good in majors for his small sample size. I think he's going to thrive in Tampa Bay, really. And Johnny DeLuca, he's a fast riser. He was a late-round pick, if I'm not mistaken, a 25th-round pick out of Oregon. And, you know, he's risen through the minor league system very quickly. He dominated in AAA this year. He was solid in his cup of coffee in the majors. And I think I think he's going to be a starting outfielder this year for Tampa Bay. I can see him really balling out. Margot, you know, he's a speedy guy who plays solid defense. So I like this trade for both parties.
So there's two ways this trade goes for the Dodgers, and there's two ways this trade goes for the Rays. For the Dodgers, this is not the right dollar amount for Tyler Glasnow. Just simply put, they tried to give a median value. It's going to be wrong. He's either going to way exceed the contract or way underperform the contract. There's no middle ground here, right? So that those are the two options for the Dodgers. For the Rays, Ryan Pepiot either develops into a good pitcher and will be traded in 2026, or nothing happens. So you get two wide ends of the spectrum. This is the Rays like MO sort of. They trade the Blake Snells of the world, the James Shields of the world, the Matt Garzas of the world, and they get the next young thing, and then 2 or 3 years down the line they trade that guy for the next guy in line. And just about every big pitcher for the Rays the last 15 years since they became the Rays as opposed to the Devil Rays, you have the same arc of they're going to be really good and then they get traded late in their arbitration cycle. You know, the Rays were going to be on the hook for $25 million this year. The Rays don't pay that. They just don't, right? Maybe position players. I don't think they've ever done that. Yeah, like position players, the Longorias and the Wanders.
I don't even think Longoria got $25 million annually from them.
No, definitely not. But I think they'd be more willing to pay a position player that than a pitcher. Because it feels like every single Rays pitcher has the exact same, like, injury history at a certain point. So, of course, he went to the Dodgers and Tyler Glasnow. If there's any team besides the Rays that would get, like, pitching wizardry, I think it's the Dodgers. So if you want to make some money, I guess bet on Tyler Glasnow to win ML Cy Young.
I mean, here's my biggest problem overall with it is that actually, let me go back just a little bit. I'm going to disagree with your take here, Splash, about going for the median value. I feel like that's actually the perfect offer to give to a guy like Glasnow because he is so high risk.
Oh, it is a perfect offer. It's just going to be wrong because he is just not likely to finish with the median value.
Right? Yeah, I get what you're saying with it. Yeah.
Like, he's not going to be I can't think of, like, an example, but he's not going to be, like, a 150 innings and, like, pretty good. He's either going to be awesome, like Cy Young contender every year, or not throw, like, 100
on
more
the
than
IL every single year.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't think, like, that middle range of outcomes, I don't think is really there. Like, say, I don't know, being Dak Prescott, I don't see it. But being Patrick Mahomes, yeah, I could see it. Or being Justin Fields on the other side, I could see that, you know. But I don't think he's going to be like Dak.
He's not going to be down the road, but down the middle. But that's why it makes it a perfect offer.
Yes,
even though it's going to be wrong. Yeah, yeah. Because that's the thing right now is that as much as it's good, as much as Tyler Glasnow is exceptionally good, that injury proneness that he has is going to be his downfall. It's either going to be he's going to be injured all the time and you wasted a lot of money on him, or he's going to give you Cy Young caliber seasons. And if there is any team that is shown that they are willing to work with that risk, it's been the Dodgers. Take a look at a lot of their pitchers they've had over the last couple of years have definitely had their injury problems, but yet they're still okay going with it. So this is a bit of an interesting move because they're taking that gamble in a rotation where, honestly, if you ask me, I think they needed to get a little more stability more than a risk. But I see why they're doing it, because obviously it's good. And also Manuel Margot, I think, is going to be at least solid with the team. He's not going to be amazing, obviously. But honestly, he could. Who knows? We've seen the Dodgers take kind of mid players and turn them into being really good ones. So who knows? Something good could happen there.
Yeah,
but I think they go for it.
I mean, I was going to say, they've done that with Jason Hayward most recently. They did that with J.D. Martinez this past year, sort of turned their careers around. But
did that with Chris Taylor, turned him from being a DFA player into a legend and hurts
I,
me.
I will
still
say that, like, I feel like their Midas touch with the pitchers may have worn off a little bit. I mean, I'm just looking at this past year when Kershaw and Bobby Miller were their only pitchers, at least only starting pitchers with an ERA plus above 100, and they also didn't have a single pitcher qualify for the ERA title. And Tyler Glasnow, as talented as he is, he's never thrown more than 120 innings in a big league season. So I sort of get what you're saying. They do need some type of workhorse, because right now it's Walker Buehler hasn't pitched in by next year. It will be 2 years since he last threw a big league pitch. And then you're relying on Glasnow, who has never pitched more than 120 innings in the season, and then Bobby Miller, and then a whole lot of question marks. Let's put it that way. A lot of talent, though.
Yeah, because that's the thing right now, is that you have this team right now that is very, very, very talented. Like, you take a look up and down their roster all the way throughout, there's a ton of talent, but there's also a ton of these question marks, like you were saying. And that's really going to be the key for them this year, is that, yes, they've added so many players. They've added Shohei Ohtani, who is going to be your DH this year, not pitching at all, but he is going to be your DH. And now you've added a ace-level pitcher. The problem with that ace-level pitcher is that he's James Paxton. He's a guy that is exceptionally talented, exceptionally good, but always has those lingering injury concerns. And the more injuries you get in baseball, the more likely you are to get another. That's how they work seemingly all the time. And I hate saying that, but really is true. And for Glasnow, his ceiling is absolutely through the roof. Watching him pitch is watching a clinic, is watching a master at work. He is exceptionally good, but it doesn't matter how good he is if he isn't playing for you. And that's the big thing you have to kind of weigh the options on, weigh the risk versus reward. And that's why they went with that kind of middle deal, which we agree is a really good deal for it. But now you're also getting rid of a couple other big players where, Pepiot is going to be, you know what, again, he's going to be that next project for the Rays, who, again, have this amazing ability to take players who have a little bit of upside, you know, and then just turn them into stars. Isaac Paredes is one that really jumps out at me from that. And then DeLuca, they now have an opening in outfield with Manuel Margot gone. So they really have addressed what they needed in this trade. So now it's just going to be a matter of how well is this going to work out for the Dodgers? Because right now, that's really the big question that I'm getting from this. You have a lot to see from them. You have a lot to see where these question marks, if they pan out right, this team is going to be a menace across baseball and a very easy World Series favorite. But it's that really big if. And there's a lot of question marks. And the more question marks you have, the less chance that all of them succeed.
So throwing this out there, Glasnow is tied for ninth in NL Cy Young voting on FanDuel behind Strider, Wheeler, Webb, Burns, Gallen, Fried, Senga, Steele. He's tied with Sonny Gray and Aaron Nola. He's also famously horrible in October, so he joins Clayton Kershaw there.
I was about
there.
To mention that.
I'm excited to watch the Colorado Rockies beat the Dodgers in the NLDS this season. and one thing with Pepiot, last year he had a left on base, like a stranded rate, above 99%. Like, for context, like in the mid 70s is fine, low 80s is pretty lucky. He was over 90% and 99% in 42 innings. He allowed 10 earned runs in 42 innings. That's very good. 7 home runs, so a lot of solo shots. And then if he allowed hits, allowed walks, which, to be fair, he had a 0.762 whip, so he didn't allow too many of those. But a 4.18 FIP is a little scary compared to a 2.14 ERA. For his career, his FIP is 2 full runs higher than his ERA. That's the Dodgers, but I think the Rays can maybe figure this out. So I'm excited to see this. Yes?
Yeah, that's what I mean. I think he's the type of player who the Rays tend to succeed with. I mean, I remember when the Rays got Charlie Morton. I feel like, if I'm not mistaken, when Morton was an Astro, his ERA improved a lot, but I remember his FIP being somewhat questionable his second year in Houston, and then he went to Tampa Bay and became a finalist for the Cy Young Award. So I think this is another situation where the Rays will get Pepiot and he will become an ace type pitcher, you know, joining, you know, Zach Eflin, I remember, sort of similar deal. So I think that Pepiot is definitely, you know, pan out. I'm really excited to see what DeLuca can do if he's playing every day. Also, to your point about October, I just saw someone sent this to me on Instagram, one of my friends. It's the worst playoff ERA since 2019 with at least 25 innings pitched. Number one is Tyler Glasnow, 5.72. Number two is Clayton Kershaw, 5.10. Granted, we don't know if Clayton Kershaw will be on the Dodgers next year or if he'll even pitch next year because he's out until at least August. So just throwing it out there. The Dodgers, on paper every year, it feels like they're a threat in some way. And then you run into October and they turn into the 1962 Mets. So will this happen again? Their only ring in the last 35 years was in a shortened season. So I don't know if this is the year they break through. I think they're a really top-heavy roster. Lots of star power, but very top-heavy.
Yeah, and that's going to be basically the question as we see going down the stretch here, is that we all know that the talent there is immense. We all know it's immense. It's about whether or not it can stay on the field here. And that's where, like, I still think that they're not done this offseason. I think that they're still going to go for more. And potentially, if I'm the Dodgers, I'm looking at trying to get another arm that's going to be a little more stable. Just one that you are pretty confident is going to give you 175 or more innings and just go from there. Any other last notes we have on the Glasnow trade?
Is this a segue to a certain Yamamoto conversation?
It just might be a segue to a certain Yamamoto conversation. Who knows?
Maybe it
Thank
is.
Thank you for spoiling that. Yeah, it definitely is here. Because now it's time for one of our favorite segments. It's time for Three Words Only, where we have a topic in baseball. And we have to explain our point using only three words, and then we can deliberate after that. But after that amazing segue here, you're exactly right here. Yamamoto is the first topic here. Still not signed, has gone to a number of different teams. The first really big free agent domino in Shohei has finally fallen, went to the Dodgers. But now Yamamoto is looking like he's going to command a pretty nice price tag too, has an amazing splitter, that yo-yo curveball, as he calls it. And watching those in bullpen sessions is like watching a video game. But what do you guys think? What are your three words here for Yamamoto? Because I think this is going to be a big story for people going forward.
And trying to summarize this in only three words is incredibly difficult. This thing. So I'm going to go with, This is a rare one where I'm kind of stumped on how to describe it, because that's
this one's a tough one. Like, this one's really tough.
Yeah,
there's so many different ways you could go with it.
Okay, so I'll go with this one, which is straight. I'll go straightforward with this one. Lots of money, because. Yep. There are rumblings that he will get more money than Gerrit Cole did when he entered free agency. Now, I don't know if that is real. Jeff Passan reported yesterday that nobody has actually made an offer to him. And now there's a report that he probably won't sign until after Christmas. What I will say is that someone is going to, you know, like, they're just, these teams are going to engage in a bidding war, and they're just going to keep trying to top each other, and it seems likely it will be over $300 million. This is probably the best pitcher, at least, to come out of Japan ever. You know, he's better than Masahiro Tanaka was, I think. He's better than Yu Darvish was. He's better than Hideo Nomo, and I mean, as a pitcher, I think he's better than Otani. He's better than Senga too, and he's only 25. So with all that in mind, he could get a 9-year contract and still get a decent payday after that contract expires. Heck, he could even go back to Japan if he wanted to, because I know that's what a lot of players from there do, is they go back and finish their careers up there. look at Masahiro Tanaka. He's back in Japan. And Daisuke Matsuzaka also went back to Japan. Heck, I think Koji Uehara may have gone back too. So the point is, he's going to get a ton of money. I'm really curious to see how he does in the U.S. I think he's equipped to succeed in the U.S., so he will be worth whatever he gets paid.
Yeah, this is one of the rare cases that you have a potential superstar pitcher on the market at age 25. You know, he doesn't turn 26 until August next year, and, you know, this just doesn't happen when you have Japanese pitchers come over. Either they're super, super young and not as, like, quite as established, right? And you have the potential, like, the international free agent sort of deal, like drafting players or like high school players, right? You're super young on that stage. You don't know what you have there. Or you're on the, I don't want to say back half of your career, but like Kodai Senga is not necessarily a 10-year option for the Mets, for example, right? Or I'll use a position player example. Ichiro spent 10 years in Japan before he came over to the U.S., right? And he was 27 when he debuted with the Mariners. Yamamoto is even younger than that, and he has a just ludicrous resume here. A career ERA in Japan under 2, which, a little bit of a depressed run environment, I get it, but this is ludicrous. It feels like it gets lower every single season. And I think he's worth it. You know, I think he's a guy, if you end up paying him a Garrett Cole-ish salary, I think there's a very, very good chance it ends up being worth it. I think the stuff is there. I think the mentality is there. And I'm just waiting for Roki Sasaki to make like $1 billion. Like that.
Oh, yeah. No, he's going to
happen here in a couple of years. If Yamamoto and Imanga and this host of these Japanese pitchers, if they like do the thing like they're supposed to, Roki Sasaki might make $1 billion here in a couple of years, especially if he leaves early. I don't know the logistics of that. MLB Scoops apparently thinks the Braves would be in on Sasaki, and I can confirm there's zero chance that happens because the Braves just don't do that.
You're also trusting a tweeter who has zero game when it comes to that.
Hey, he got the Martin Perez to the Pirates, so maybe 1%.
With all due respect to MLB Scoops, that is not someone I trust.
Regardless, I think Yamamoto would be worth it. I didn't give my three words. Shoot.
I've been waiting on the edge.
What are your three words?
Okay, then? Alex, you go with your three words. I forgot mine. I apologize.
You go this whole speech and don't even have the three words yet.
Okay.
I got it.
It's a new segment. It's called 3,000 words.
3,000 words. Perfect.
They say a picture's worth 1,000 words. Will Splash has 3,000 words to go for you.
Yeah. My three words are show me dollars. It's just going to be worth it.
Perfect.
I think the bidding
show
war.
Show the money.
Yeah, the bidding war. I hope he goes to the Yankees. That'd be fun. You continue the legacy of.
Yeah, I'm going to disagree with that. But
I understand why you would disagree with that. But I would go to the Yankees. I would continue the legacy of Tanaka and other Asian pitchers.
And Kei Gawa.
Shout out to Chien-Min Wong.
Hiroki Kuroda, he was pretty good for the Yankees too.
He was awesome in MLB Power Pros, but he was labeled a swing man, so it was kind of annoying. But anyways, yeah, show me dollars.
All right, I'll be the only one that actually uses a team directly that he's going to sign for here. And my three words are Ohtani gets help. And
I'm stepping in. I am vetoing this idea. He doesn't want to play in Ohtani's shadow.
That's exactly what I'm worried about, though.
Yeah.
Here's the other thing, though, is that he has already said that he wants to play with other Japanese players too. And right now, one of the biggest stars in Japan is Ohtani. Why would you not want to play alongside him? Those two together at 1-2 in the rotation.
Well, you're blast now.
Unstoppable. Yeah, Glasnow's going to be number 5 when he keeps getting injured.
That's a good point. Hey, they could re-sign Trevor Bauer.
Please no. Anyway,
terrible idea, actually.
Yeah, that's a cancelable idea to you, Splash. You can put it in the corner. No, okay.
They can trade for Bryce Elder. I don't know.
But like,
give me Yamamoto in exchange for Bryce Elder, please.
No. Anyway, if I can't do Woo for Yamamoto, then you can't do Bryce Elder for Yamamoto.
Okay, anyway. Respect 2023 All-Star Bryce Elder and Bryce Harper's son.
Anyway, regardless, we were just talking about it in the last segment here. The Dodgers need a lot more help on the pitching side of things. They need someone who's going to be a stalwart, someone who's going to be a bit more of a workhorse. And Yamamoto looks like he very well could be that guy here. And they've already showed that they're willing to go all in for the next little bit. Here, over the course of his time pitching from when he was 18 years old, he has an ERA of 1.72, which is exceptionally good. That is exceptionally good. And during every year of the last number of years, he has pitched over every year since 2021, he has pitched over 170 innings. That's exactly what you're looking for here. What the number I gave earlier was like 175 innings, something like that. That's right about at that benchmark. That's right about what you're looking for. And you've got the money now because you honestly gave Glasnow a, like I said, the median deal. And you're only paying Ohtani $2 million here a year because later on it's going to be hell to pay. But at that point right now, if you're in win now mode, the biggest thing this team needs now is a pitcher, a stalwart starting pitcher. I think Yamamoto is a perfect fit. He said he also wants to play with Japanese players. Why would you not want to play right alongside Shohei Ohtani? Both of them are going to be getting a ton of spotlight, as well as all of the Japanese market.
I mean, I get it. That's, you know, it's the Dodgers. I mean, man, they're spending kind of like drunken sailors this offseason. And I think, you know, I think Yamamoto is definitely an impact guy. He could be a one or a two already. I wonder if the Dodgers, after the Glasnow deal, are still willing to give Yamamoto $300 million. That's my question. I really feel like he's going to end up in New York, either a Yankee or a Met. I know that the Phillies were mentioned as a possibility. Phillies, Giants, Red Sox, I believe. Oh, the Blue Jays were the other team. But I really think it's either going to be the Mets or the Yankees. And the Dodgers, I think, are a distant third in the running.
We'll see. I'm not sure. I just think that is the best fit. My other three words I had if I chose Yankees would have been Tanaka version 2. But from there, hopefully better than what Tanaka did, because Tanaka did well, but I would hope that Yamamoto would do better.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're going to move on to another player that has talked about getting a ton of money here, and that's one Cody Bellinger. Bellinger went out and said right now that he's expecting upwards of $200 million in his next contract here. And if you're hearing me kind of chuckle as I say that, there's a reason for that. I'm not quite sure what team would want to give him. Like, yes, he did. He's played very well the last 2 years, but is he worth $200 million? Guys, what are your three words when it comes to Cody Bellinger? If you guys don't have one, I can go first.
I got it.
Okay.
My three words are collecting infinity stones. So Cody Bellinger has this goofy trait. His OPS from year to year has not had the same lead digit in back-to-back seasons. He had a 900 OPS as a rookie, 800 in his second year, 1,000 his third year, 700 his fourth year, 500 his fifth year, 600 his sixth year, and 800 last year. So you are getting one of the most inconsistent players in the sport, and it tracks to me. Last year, he had a massive, massive, like one of the biggest cuts in his strikeout rate in the last 50 years. Massive. Great. he sacrificed quality of contact to get that. He hit over 300. He was one of four players in Major League Baseball to hit 300, have 20 home runs, and have 20 steals. You might recognize the other three. Their names are Acuña, Freeman, and Ohtani. So four MVPs right there. He plays the good gloves. You can put him in center field. You can put him at first base. I have my hesitations with the huge contract because while he has been an MVP caliber player for one season and was a very good player in his young days in 2017 and 2018 and was great last year, he does have a negative 1.7 WAR 2 years ago and was a pretty middling player in 2022. So wherever he signs, expect sort of Dansby Swanson syndrome, shout out to the Cubs, on crack here with the highs and the lows. I don't know if the cutting the strikeouts is sustainable. I like the strategy in theory, but I don't know. He's going to be all over the place.
Yeah, I think my three words here are big question mark, just because, like you said, Splash, I mean, the surface numbers, I mean, he was a 2020 guy, OPS back up to 881. Like, that's a huge step forward, particularly great in the second half of the season. I mean, he looked like his old self all of a sudden. You know, 909 OPS in the second half, particularly great in the month of July when he hit 400 with an 1122 OPS, and he still was able to maintain an OPS above 800 over the last 2 months of the season. But I mean, the fact that his hard hit rate was down, his barrel percentage was down, his average exit velocity was down. I mean, really, there's, you know, his ex-WOBA was all right, you know, 327. His WOBA, 370, all right, that's pretty good. But really, like you said, the quality of contact is concerning. I think, all right, 268 expected batting average is fine, but I don't expect him to necessarily replicate what he did this year. And it's a question of, are you going to pay him for what he is right now or what he was in 2019? Or are you going to pay him acknowledging that he struggled mightily from in 2021 and 2022, where he was one of the worst hitters in baseball? So $200 million, I would not give him that. I would not give him the years that he's looking for either. Apparently he's looking for like 10 years or 12 years or something like that. That's just ridiculous in my opinion. So would I give him $100 million? Maybe. Yeah. 5 years or so, but I would not mess with giving a guy as risky as Bellinger $200 million.
So my three words are demoted to common. Back in Aaron on the show a couple years ago, he was, again, a number of years ago, he was a diamond player, was one of the best in all of baseball, but had fallen so far down that he was legitimately a common, which is the lowest level.
Got the Chris Davis treatment.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? Looking back at his stats, I can see why. Like, it was bad. Taking a look from this, in 2020 was a down year from 2019. 2019, he had a 305 batting average, won the MVP, did amazing. Then the shortened season, he batted 239, which, and an OPS plus of 112. You know, better than average. That's all right. And then 2021 happened. In 2021, through 95 games, he had an OPS plus of 44. He didn't even break 100 total bases.
He had a Mathis.
Exactly.
One of the few people not named Jeff Mathis to achieve a Mathis.
Exactly. And it's just, it's so bad that one year. 542. And then the next year, people were thinking, okay, you know what? This has got to be a sign for his breakout year. Well, he improved a little bit. Not a whole lot, though. His batting average rose from 165 to 210, which, to be fair, to give him some credit, yeah, that is a jump. He did jump up. But 210 is abysmal. It's absolutely abysmal with an OPS of 81, But, you know, getting back on track, that's below average, though, still. And then 2023, he has his massive, massive year here, batting 307, an OPS plus of 133. And you know what? Fantastic. Good on him. Played exceptionally well this year, so I can see why he wants to. But I can't get the feeling out of my head that this is the peak. This is as good as it gets for him, and I don't want to pay him anywhere near that amount of money. He's 27 years old. He's should be like approaching like his peak years right now, but we've also seen now a couple times that he just falls off the face of the planet. He just doesn't do what is needed of him. And he just isn't. Is he worth $200 million to me? The answer to that question is no. He is not worth that kind of risk. That money is someone you give to someone that you know is going to produce. You don't give that to a risk. You don't give that money to a risk. Like, I mean, we were just talking about here on the last, during the first segment here with Tyler Glasnow. Tyler Glasnow is not getting $200 million. He's making $136.5 million. And we're talking about him being a potential Cy Young candidate. But that's only if he stays healthy. Bellinger has those same questions. Is it injury related? No, it's performance based, which is a lot scarier to try and mitigate because you don't know. This is going to sound really weird, and I apologize for it. This is kind of a weird analogy, but you would rather have a player that is not on the field than someone that is hurting you on the field. Like, at this point right now, one of them doesn't take up a roster spot and allows other people to play and help the team. You being on the field and bad hurts the team because you're using that roster spot, because you're taking up the money, because someone else isn't getting to play. So right now, am I saying he's a bad player? Absolutely not. Bellinger is a good baseball player. But there is a $200 million is way too much of a risk. I could see, you know, potentially a deal like the extension we just saw again to Tyler Glasnow. I could see that being the case here because at that point, that would make a little bit more sense. But $200 million, no way. I'm sorry.
You know, I will say I like some of the developments with the batted ball stuff. His line drive percentage was up by 4 percentage points. And line drives, if you are not hitting the ball like really, really, really hard, like Judge, Acuna, Stanton, Guerrero, etc. And line drives are optimal here because if you're hitting weak fly balls, like Bellinger was in 2019 when he had a 34% fly ball rate, a lot of those are going to be outs. But if you're hitting line drives, this is the Luis Arias method, the Freddie Freeman method. You're just spraying line drives from line to line. I think there is some positives here. Again, I don't know if he's necessarily a 133 OPS plus guy and a 4.5 war guy, but it is encouraging to have the higher line drive rate. It's above his career average, 25% above the MLB average, 24.5%. Not quite as high as his MVP season. That was 30%. But, you know, if he's consistently generating those line drives and he's not striking out, I think there is some value in that. His strikeout rate was below even his MVP season, down at 15.7%. Now, he didn't walk. He walked half the rate that he did in 2019. And 7.2% is not a great walk rate. But he traded some walks. He traded some strikeouts for that line-to-line line drive contact. So there is value there. He's good defensively, but unless it's on a particularly long contract, $200 million is a little rich. Would you guys offer him the Dansby Swanson contract, 7 for $177 million?
The issue I have with this is I don't know if I want to give him 7 years, although he is only 28. So, I mean, I guess, you know, all right, he'd be under contract till he's 35 or 34. But, like, I don't know if I would give him $170 million, and I don't know if I would give him 7 years. That's the issue. I think the most I would go with him right now is probably 5 125 or so. I don't think he's – even that would be a risk. That's the issue. I just don't know if – because I don't think he's as bad as his numbers showed he was in 21 and 22. But I don't expect him to be an MVP ever again. So I think he's, you know, maybe around what you – if you could get what he produced this year even, yes, he'd be worth that contract. But I'm not sure – while I do like that he cut down his strikeouts significantly, I don't know if I believe he can be an 880 OPS or a 133 OPS plus guy again. Or consistently, you know what I mean?
I get that. And that's one thing that right now it's going to really be interesting to see going forward. Because if he does keep at a good split like he had in 2023, then he's going to be worth every penny of it. But it's a really big if, as we've seen. Let's move on here to our next one here. And the news broke during our last podcast recording.
While we were doing our outro.
We were legitimately like 30 seconds away from ending the show when the news broke. And thank you, Splash, for bringing it up, because I was not looking anywhere near to see the breaking news. Shohei Ohtani, so we know about his incredible contract. 10 years, $700 million, which makes what Bellinger is asking for look like a drop in the bucket. But that's not the story here anymore. That was going to be the story, $70 million AAV. That's no longer the case. Ohtani now has... it's been shown that his contract is a deferred contract where he will only be making $2 million every year for the next 10 years. What about that other, what about that other money? What about that other $680 million? That's all going to be deferred. Deferred money over the next 10 years. He's basically going to be making $68 million every year after his Dodgers tenure is done. I've never seen... baseball has never seen a contract quite like this. Like, we've seen deferred contracts before. We've seen a lot of them. Chris Davis, Bobby Bonilla. Heck, even Ken Griffey Jr.
Max Scherzer,
exactly.
Ooh, Mookie has some deferments with LA.
Freddie Freeman does too.
Yeah, there's a ton of them. But... none quite like this. This is interesting on top of it, because one of the other things that is a big weird flag to me is the fact that there's no interest on the trade, which normally that's the reason why you do defer contracts, is to get the percentage interest on it. But Ohtani said overall that he wanted to do this to be a, like, to give the Dodgers more cap flexibility while he's there. So, guys, this is one of the most interesting deals we've seen in the history of baseball. What are your three words with this? It's hard to put this one into three words.
So my three words are unique financial circumstances. Ohtani is different from every other player in Major League Baseball and just about every other player in the big four North American sports, that most of his income does not come on the baseball diamond, right? He can take $2 million a year and make a massive sacrifice in terms of that value, because he's making, you know, $40 million, $50 million a year off the field. And I would imagine that number gets bigger when you're on the Dodgers as opposed to the Angels, with all due respect to the Angels. If that number continues to get bigger, he might end up making more than $68 million in a year on endorsements, on brand deals, on with Reebok and other brands he's associated with. And he's the only player potentially in the history of Major League Baseball that can pull this off, at least from a financially viable perspective, because technically, you know, Aaron Judge, he's a multimillionaire already. Does he really need a $360 million contract? Does Mike Trout really need a $420-something million contract? Does Mookie Betts need a $300 million contract? Really? No, but from a baseball standpoint, they'll take it because that's the maximum they can get or whatever. That's as much as they can squeeze out of it. But Ohtani is in this spot that he's already making more than he's going to make on the baseball diamond. He's not sacrificing half of his income, 80% of his income. He's sacrificing, you know, what, 40% of his income from last year. He made, what, $30 million or so with the Angels, and he made over $40 million in endorsements. So you are in this just unique financial circumstance because other players, the Trouts and the Judges of the world, they're in the single figures here. They're in 3 million, 4 million, 5 million in endorsements. Ohtani is 10 times in that, 9, 10 times in that. So I think it's just unique financial circumstances that allow this to happen. And fair enough to Ohtani being a team player. I will say it, in a sport without a salary cap, it does kind of rub me the wrong way that you have potentially the best player to ever play the sport taking a way, way, way below market value deal. Although for the CBT purposes, it's what, $43 million, $46 million. The Dodgers don't get out of all of the money, at least now. But I don't know. From a competitive, you know, competitive standpoint, I don't like it. But from a team building standpoint, this is a great for the Dodgers. You can finance Glass now, you can finance Yamamoto, you can finance Bellinger, you can finance everyone, you can finance Max Fried next offseason, you can finance Roki Sasaki in a couple of years, you can finance the third baseman that won the Triple Crowns like 17 times in Japan.
Yes,
Murakami. Okay, great. So, unique financial circumstances.
Yeah, my three words are, can't believe I have to say this, but learn the rules. Because I'm saying this because everyone's going on and on, like, oh my God, he's ruining baseball, all this nonsense. Just so you guys know that I'm sure your favorite team has had the opportunity to do this. It's in the rule book that there is no limit on deferred money. Ohtani's just the first one to exploit this rule, sort of. So, no, he's not ruining the game of baseball, guys. He's not ruining sports. You know what's the saying? Don't hate the player, hate the game. This is 100% going to get modified, by the way, in the next CBA, because I cannot see this happening again. But it was his idea to propose this. He wants the team to be competitive. I think this is also sort of him being like, hey, I want to be on a winner, actually. So I'm willing to sacrifice my pay for, you know, what I do on the field, because I want to finally get that elusive first playoff experience and a World Series ring. So I completely understand why he did it. Also, I should mention that if he were to move to another state after this contract, completely different financial situation for him. So I think people, before getting all up in arms and stuff and thinking, oh my God, how is this allowed? Well, it's allowed because it's in the rule book. There's no limit on deferred money. So before you go attacking the most marketable player in baseball, please brush up on your reading. It's just a suggestion here.
Definitely, yeah. California will step in and try to get their tax revenue there.
Oh yeah, I'm sure they will.
That's going to be a nice lawsuit in 10 years when Ohtani's living in Florida or Texas.
When he decides to leave, yeah.
Yeah, when he lives in one of the states that doesn't have an income tax like that.
All right, fair enough. And I remember that was part of this, was that if he's living somewhere else at the time, then it would be, he wouldn't be taxed like that. So maybe that's part of the decision on it, who knows. Anyway, my three words, and this is going to sound, again, a little bit odd here, but are 2036 Compton Dodgers. I think what's going to happen here on this is, because after this little bit, the team is not going to be competitive after 10 years. I think once Ohtani is gone and they're going to be paying $68 million in pure dead cap, that is going to cripple the team. It's going to completely cripple them. And maybe even to the point where they have to move because they don't have the money to make it work. at that point. I think it's very possible at this point. As much as, like, I think that the team is still going to be making money, obviously, I also think it's equally likely that the team says, all right, we have a ton of dead cap that we can't get around at this point. Why even try to be competitive? And it could even turn into a relocation. I'm probably stretching a bit on this, but at the same time, I can't help but just feel that with this contract, the Dodgers are going to be screwed from 2035 onward for another 10 years, where this is going to be halted as a move that will very much hurt the Dodger franchise after it's done. Like, again, for the next coming 10 years, it's going to be fine. It's going to be okay. But you're sacrificing your next 10 years for these 10 years. And who knows, maybe the money is easy at that point, or who knows, maybe something else happens that makes it easier. I don't know. But the way that it's standing right now, the Dodgers are truly crippling themselves with this kind of deal where, yes, in the coming 10, it's fine. It's very good. You may very well may get another World Series championship or two, as long as, you know, you probably also got to get rid of Roberts. But after that is the question. And after that, this team is going to look very, very different.
Alex, I would like to introduce you to a concept called inflation.
Yeah, I was about to mention this.
I know. But is inflation going to basically make it so $68 million is nothing?
No, not necessarily. But this is the Dodgers, right? This isn't like the Orioles or the Guardians or the Rays or the A's that have a payroll this size. This is a quarter of the Dodgers' payroll, a fifth of the Dodgers' payroll, depending on the year. And, you know, just even like a modest growth in the salary, or the quote unquote salary cap, a modest growth in the salary, which, if you're the Dodgers, guess what? You're going to have all these new fans coming in. This new like sphere of influence, if you will. So I don't think this is ever going to be a money problem for the Dodgers. And even if it is, even if you extrapolate it out and say there's no inflation, it's going to be $68 million of their $250 to $300 million payroll. And that's a quarter, you know, 20 to 25% ish of what they're spending. One, I'm sure they're going to be pretty happy with that after they lose 10 straight times in the NLDS to the Rockies. Number two, you're still going to field a competitive team. You're going to have $200 million, $250 million. You're going to have one of the top five payrolls, even if you take out the Ohtani contract at bare minimum. So I don't see the same issues there, Alex.
Yeah, I'm going to also throw it out there that the luxury tax threshold is just going to keep going up. So, $68 million is, I'm not going to say it's going to like be nothing for them, but I mean, they're going to have other contracts coming off the books. And yes, they still have deferrals on Betts and on Freeman, but I think it's not going to be as big of a deal as we think. I think that they're still going to be able to spend plenty. And I mean, I think it's kind of a win-win for both sides.
Fair enough. Well, and that's part of the beauty of the podcast. We can disagree on it as well, but let us know what you guys think on Twitter at @LAR_baseball. Let us know what you guys think. What are your three words for these topics? Do you think that the Dodgers made a horrible mistake with it? Do you guys think the Dodgers made the play of in baseball history? Go ahead and let us know on Twitter. But now it's time for everyone's favorite segment. It is trivia time. And for trivia today, I'm going to hand it off to the one, the only, Ryan Splash Potts.
All right. Before we get into trivia, I do have an inflation calculator. According to officialdata.org, if you start with $250 million, your start year is 2022, sorry, your end year is 2036, and your future rate is 3%, that $250 million grows to $385 million. So that 68 figure, I think, becomes less and less. So anyways, hi, welcome to trivia. I'm Splash, joined today by the king of trivia, besides me, Mac, and Alex, sorry, Don't really have any intro for you. Today, we are talking about guys who performed when it mattered, guys who came up clutch. So I'm asking you, will you come up clutch today? So today's...
I mean, you weren't clutch with that intro.
Yes, I was clutch.
Ooh.
Ice in my veins. Call me Tyrese Halliburton in the in-season tournament. Also, what would happen if baseball had an in-season tournament?
That'd be funny.
I don't know. I don't know how, I'd feel about that.
I mean, I want it to be a little one game. Everything would turn to like the World Baseball Classic at that point.
That would be very cool. Actually, yeah, that would be a single elimination tournament, like All-Star Weekend.
Oh, 100%. That would be amazing.
Okay, so if you... Okay, let's say you expand, right? You're 32 teams that you have. You're round of 32, you're round of 16, you're round of 8, you're round of 4, then you're championship. That's 5 days. If you turn All-Star Weekend into, or All-Star Week into like an event like that, that would be sick. Now, that the problem is you need to have some sort of... like with the NBA prize. The prize is like $500,000. Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. But I would add something like if you win it, you make the playoffs or you jump the next level. So if you're...
I would say at that point, maybe do like a draft, like you jump up in the draft pick selection.
Or that.
Or something like that, yeah.
Then again, if you're a player on that team, you might not be on the team the next year. That's my only issue with like that. But... I'm thinking if you're like the 6 seed, you jump up a seed to the 5 seed, or if you're out of the playoffs, you get a 1-game chance to make the playoffs. I don't know. Anyways, the name of today's trivia is you have to pick the player who led each team in win probability added in 2023.
Oh.
We're going to do a little bit different from just going back and forth guessing. Each round, you will have to give me 2 players from the same division. And as soon as someone gets 3 points in a division, you win that division. And the first one to get 3 divisions wins. Does that make sense?
I think.
Okay. So say you go first, you will give me 2 players from the same division, preferably 2 different teams, but I guess you could choose 2 players on the same team to try to get 1 point. I don't know. Strategy's up to you. But you give me 2 players. So you give me player X and player Y for team A and team B. If they led their team in win probability added, you get your 2 points in that division. And as soon as you get to 3 points in a division, you lock up that division. It's like tic-tac-toe. So your goal is to get 3 points. First one to 3 total points wins.
Okay.
All right. So, Alex, please pick heads or tails.
Heads.
Flip a coin. This is great podcasting, by the way. It's tails.
Amazing.
So, Mac, please choose your division and give me 2 players from that division.
So, I'm just supposed to give you, like, any 2 players?
Yes.
And is it position players and pitchers?
Only position players.
Only position players. All right.
Yes.
All right. I'm going to go with the AL West.
Sure.
I was like, don't think AL West is the only thing I know.
I'm going to go with Shohei Ohtani and Julio Rodriguez.
That is 1 correct answer, Shohei Ohtani. Alex, 2 players, 1 division.
Interesting. It wasn't that, because honestly, I'm going to be real. That was my guess, too. That's exactly what I was going to say verbatim. The fact that it wasn't Julio, that was incredible. Okay. Let's see here. Let's go to the NL East. And funny, right? No, I'm going to take Matt Olson. Actually, no, sorry. We're going to take Ronald Acuna. And we're going to take Luis Arraez.
Ronald Acuna is correct. Nice save. Sure. Luis Arraez is not correct. Mac.
Okay.
So I got pick one. A division. Pick your 2 guys. If you get 2 more correct in the AL West, you can lock that up if you wish, or you can choose a different division.
All right. Well, I think I've figured out my AL West answer. So I'm going to the AL West and I'm going to go JP Crawford and I will go with Corey Seager.
Mac, you have won the AL West.
Exactly. Yeah. Let's go.
The other two are Zach Gelof and Yordan Alvarez. Clearly the same caliber.
Oh, my God.
Hitter.
The fact that Zach Gelof played like 6 weeks in the majors and led the A's. That's,
yes.
That's hilarious.
Also, Jason Dominguez was second on the Yankees, and he played 8 games.
Yeah.
So, that's anyways, amazing. Alex, back to you. If you get two more in the NL East, you can clinch that, or you can choose a different division.
I think I'm going to go with a different division here. I think I'm going to go with the NL West.
Sure.
And I'm going to go with... I'm going to go Freddie Freeman. And I'm also going to go with... Oh, this one's actually tough because I'm like... Corbin Carroll.
Corbin Carroll is correct. Freddie Freeman is not correct.
Wow.
That's one point for Alex there. Mac, your two players.
All right. NL East. I'm going to go with... I'm going to go with Francisco Lindor. And I'm going to go with Lane Thomas.
All right, Mac, you got 2 points there. Lane Thomas, correct. Francisco Lindor, correct. So that means, Alex, if you want to get this division, you got to get both of them. Or you can choose a different division. You can lock up the NL East with two correct answers or the NL West with two correct answers.
Okay. This one, okay. So Lane Thomas, okay, this is me being stupid. I'm having a brain fart moment. Lane Thomas is with the Nationals, right?
Yes.
Okay. So I would have to get the Phillies and I would have to the Phillies and Marlins. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's go for it. On the Marlins, Jorge Soler. And on the Phillies, Trey Turner.
Jorge Soler is correct. Trey Turner is not. It is tied 2-2 in the NL East. Mac, you can knock out the NL East, or you can choose a new division.
Oh, man, because now I was thinking about that NL East one, and honestly, Trey Turner was going to be my answer.
Yeah, it makes sense.
So now I know that it's not Trey Turner. So I will – and I should add, this is just the regular season, correct?
Yes.
Okay, this makes things tougher now.
And I guess you could technically choose two Phillies and spray and pray here, I guess.
Yeah, I think I'm going to do that. So in the National League East, I'm going to take Bryce Harper, and I will also take Bryson Stott.
Well, one of those is correct. So you are up 2-0. That is Bryce Harper. He was second in the world in win probability added behind one Ronald Acuna.
Because he missed basically the first 2 months of the season.
Yep. But it was super clutch.
Cat
Alex,
clutch, I guess.
You can lock up the NL West, or you can pivot and go to a different division.
I'm going to go to a different division.
Okay.
I'm going to go to the AL Central.
All right.
And I'm going to take Bobby Witt Jr. for the Royals. And I'm going to go with Louis Bob for the White Sox.
Luis Robert is correct. Bobby Witt is not correct.
Wow!
1 point in the AL Central. Mac,
that shocks me. That actually shocks me.
You have no points on the board right now.
All right. Life, I'm going to go to the AL East, and I will go with Aaron Judge. And the other person I will go with is... I'll go with Gunnar Henderson.
Aaron Judge is correct. Gunnar Henderson is not correct.
Mm.
So, Alex, back to you.
Okay. You got rid of the easy one in the AL East.
Yeah, that was the easy one.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to go back to the Central here.
Okay.
AL Central. And I'm going to say J-Ram for the Guardians. And I'm going to say Correa for the Twins.
Jose Ramirez is correct. Carlos Correa is not correct.
I keep getting one of them, not both.
All right, back to you, Mac. If you get two in the American League East, you grab the W. Otherwise, you can try to block Alex and make his life very difficult. Or the NL Central is 0 for 5 right now. So
yeah, so okay, I think I'm going to take a stab at the NL Central. Okay. I'm just trying to remember who could have been clutch this year. I think I'm going to go with this is actually difficult. You know, because the NL Central doesn't have like a lot of standouts necessarily. I'm going to go with Nolan Arenado and Matt McClain.
That, sir, is a swing and a miss. Wow. 0 for 2. Alex, back to you.
Issue there.
You need 1 point in the AL Central or 2 points in the NL West.
Okay. I'm going to keep with the Central then, I think.
All right.
So the I have both the...
You have the Guardians White and Sox White Sox. And
the Guardians. Right. Oh, okay.
You've already whiffed once on the Twins and Royals.
Yeah. So I'm going to go with... Okay. This is going to be a bit of a swing here, but I don't know why. I feel like this guy did really well. For the Twins, I'm going to go with King Julian, Edward Julian. And for the Tigers, I'm going to go with Torkelson.
That is a swing and a miss, sir.
Dang.
Mac, back to you. 2 for 2 in the AL East clinches.
Okay, I'm going to go with Rafael Devers. And Yandy Diaz.
Mac, my friend, that is a sweep. That is a 3-0 in the division. Other players here, Anthony Santander and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. in the AL East.
I almost guessed both of those guys.
So, Alex, the players you were missing in the Central, Royce Lewis, MJ Melendez, and Kerry Carpenter.
MJ Melendez?
Yes, that is correct. NL Central, Brendan Donovan, Cody Bellinger, Christian Yelich, Jared Triolo, and TJ Friedel.
Yeah,
and the National League West, Nolan Jones, Mookie Betts, Juan Soto, Jock Peterson.
I was thinking Ha-Seon Kim for some reason for the Padres. I knew
would have been good, but it doesn't include defensive stuff.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
So, Mac, congratulations. That was, I like that. I like that format.
That maybe was fun.
I liked it too, yeah.
Maybe it would be better if there were 5 divisions instead of 6, but Mac, congratulations, pal. Very good performance.
Anything you want to say on your win there, Mac?
Yeah, that was, I honestly enjoyed that more than I thought. I was a little confused at first, but I thought that was fun. I definitely would like to run that back again, maybe with another category.
Awesome.
Oh, yeah, no, 100%. I can make that happen. Yeah.
Yep. I just need to figure out what J.P. Crawford's win probability added is, because the other 29 players, I have the number down, but I don't have Crawford's. So I got to go figure that out. But thank you for playing.
Definitely. All right, but that's going to bring us to our last segment here. The moments to ourselves, we can talk about anything we want to. It does not have to be baseball related, but it absolutely can be. Here's just a moment to talk about whatever's on our minds here. And would either of you like to go first today? If not, I will go first.
You know, I'm down to go first here.
All right. Splash, your time begins in 3, 2, 1, begin.
All right. Boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, I actually don't really have much to say here. So I hope you guys have a wonderful holiday season. I don't think we'll be recording next week. So make sure you drop a 5-star review, share it with a friend, share the podcast with a friend. Maybe share with a family member that likes baseball. Maybe your dad likes baseball or your grandfather, if they're around. Hope you guys have a nice holiday season. If we don't see you, we will see you at the beginning of January. New year, new us, 2024. No name change, but big times.
Yeah, you know what? Fair enough. That point.
Yeah,
we've already had one name change. We don't need to have two.
Yeah, I trust me, guys. We will not have another name change.
Are we sure we don't want to be a Robbie Anderson podcast?
No, if we're gonna change your name to any player, it's gonna be the Cal Raleigh Fan Club podcast.
Archie Vaughn Fan Club.
Or nope. I mean, yeah, so
it will, trust okay. me. Let me foreshadow, it will not be the Cal Raleigh fan club when we do our catcher rankings in a couple weeks.
I mean, for you, it won't, which just you means you're just going to be wrong.
This is going to be the most heated podcast in history. I thought the Ohtani Soto conversation a couple weeks ago was spicy. This is about to break the internet. Hashtag Kim K.
Oh, yeah,
By the way, guys, we should mention that, yeah, be on the lookout for some positional rankings. That's going to be, mm-hmm. I'm and sure you'll be getting a lot
Reese
of.
Reese McGuire is better than Kyle Raleigh.
Reese McGuire definitely is not, trust me.
I don't even know if McGuire's on a team right now. That's the problem.
He's on the Red Sox.
Chadwick Trump is better than Cal Raleigh.
Chadwick Trump. No. Oh, my God. That's a name I haven't
James McCann.
All right, so here, and again, like we said earlier, Splash has been canceled from the show. He will not be. New Year, New Us means no more Splash. Here. Yeah, exactly. This is the last podcast of Splash. It's been a pleasure having you, buddy. No, we're kidding. All right, Mike, you want to go next or you want me to go?
Yeah, I'll go next. All right.
All right, sounds good. Your time begins in 3, 2, 1, begin.
Yeah, so I'm just going to piggyback off something I said at the beginning of the show, which is it's really fun to be a Syracuse sports fan right now. It's been a nice distraction from the atrocity that has been the NFL season. I have just had zero fun with the NFL lately, in case you couldn't tell. Except last night, the Seahawks-Eagles game was a lot of fun. I'll say that much. It's just awesome that within, you know, hours apart, Syracuse got Kyle McCord to commit as a transfer quarterback, and Syracuse then, the basketball team went out and beat Oregon. By the way, our women's basketball team might be ranked now. So, yeah, it's just a fun time. It's, like I said, it's been a great distraction for me. Although I've had some fun with the NBA this year. College sports have been a lot of fun, so... go Orange. This is going to be a fun year. I think the basketball team is on the up and up, and the football team, boy, next year I think could be something special.
No, yeah, definitely. And thank you for mentioning the Seattle Seahawks win, because
that was awesome. Was
absolutely insane.
It kept both my fantasy seasons alive. So
amazing.
I appreciated it.
Definitely. All right, I'm ready to go then. So I'll start mine off in 3, 2, 1, begin. So those of you that know me know that I am a wrestling fan, and one of the big stories that happened earlier this year was the passing of Wyndham Rotunda, also known as Bray Wyatt, and passed away very, very young. There was a really nice little news bit that came out today that made me extraordinarily happy. And it was about what they're doing right now for Bray going forward. And the big thing with it is that they are signing him to a Legends contract. They're signing him, the Deadman, to a Legends contract to basically take care of their family for the foreseeable future. And I think that is amazing to do. And so all the proceeds from that contract will be going to the Rotunda family and to his children and all of that, and also encourage that there he's getting an even bigger sizable show as a percentage of the merch sales are going directly to the kids. And I think that is absolutely amazing. Especially for someone that the entire wrestling world truly cared about and truly loved. So the fact that him and his that his kids and his family are being taken care of after his passing is a move that needs to be done more often in not just in wrestling, but in other mediums too. But with that being said, that is the end of our podcast for Taiwan. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you go give us a 5-star review here on Spotify if you liked us. Make sure you go follow us on Twitter at LAR_baseball. You can also go follow me on the Bird app at the Sports Guy 242. Go follow Splash at Mr. Splashman 19. And go follow Mac at Matthias_A_K. But from all of us, here at Losses Above Replacement, I want to thank you all for listening. We're not sure if we're going to be doing a Christmas episode. We may just take a little time off to be with our families and with our friends here to enjoy the holiday season. If that is the case, then we will see you in the new year for positional rankings, as well as a myriad of other news. Have a great rest of your night. Stay safe. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. And I hope to see you all real soon.